Why is it that a lot of UFO researchers don't like to talk about the idea of UFO crashes?
I think that is an outgrowth of the Aztec case from 1947, or more precisely, the Frank Scully book, Behind the Flying Saucers. Scully was a columnist for Daily Variety. I think it was Weekly Variety at the time, and he'd done a couple of articles.
That was in Hollywood at the time, wasn't he?
Yes, okay. Yes. And he had done a couple of articles in 1949, very tongue-in-cheek about UFOs or UFO crashes. And then he got to talking to Silas Newton, and he eventually, I suppose, talked to Leo Gebauer, and produced a book, Behind the Flying Saucers, that talked about a crash at Aztec, one in Paradise Valley, Arizona, and another one in Arizona, and I forget exactly where it was. But in 1952, a freelance reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle was doing an article for True Magazine. They offered, I think, like $25,000 for the true story. And True didn't care whether it turned out to be real or false. They wanted to know exactly what was going on. And Kane did such a good job of debunking the idea of the UFO crashes in these locations that no other UFO researcher wanted to touch the idea of a UFO crash from that point on. Until there were stories that came out periodically about crashes, and most researchers just ignored them. NICAP wouldn't have a thing to do with them. APRO was a little bit more liberal in their acceptance of stories. And APRO was, of course, one of the first organizations to embrace alien abductions, where NICAP stood way back from that as well. So we had this attitude throughout almost all of ufology that UFO crashes didn't happen. In 1975, a fellow named Robert Spencer Carr said that he had talked to five people, and they had told him about this UFO crash in New Mexico, and he assumed it was Aztec. Len Stringfield enters the story again and said that he had talked to Carr, and it turned out that those five people, that the Carr wouldn't name to the general public, Len Stringfield knew. So Len kind of accepted it, but then an article came out in Official UFO Magazine written by a guy named Mike McClellan that again took apart the idea of this crash near Aztec, New Mexico. So you had that thing circulating again and again, and everybody saying, no, that just didn't happen. I understand Scott Ramsey has done more research. I haven't seen his research. I don't know what all he has found that suggests maybe something happened at Aztec. And when Scott completes his research, he said he would let me know what he'd found, and then we might debate the reality of a crash at Aztec at some point. But because of that, UFO researchers didn't want anything to do with UFO crashes until Len's landmark paper in 1978. And then that was about the same time that Jesse Marcel came forward and talked about picking up the pieces, and a couple of other key witnesses were found that led us into the Roswell case. Researchers, and I think specifically of like Mark Rodiger at the Center for UFO Studies and Don Schmidt, and began to think, well, maybe there's something in this Roswell case that we ought to take a look at, and they dragged me into the whole thing as well. But it was Len Stringfield that kind of unlocked the door and pushed us kicking and screaming through it.
How many UFO crashes have there been, Kevin, and how far back do they go?
If you want to go back, you could go back to 10,000 B.C., In the book, I start in 840 A.D. with an event that has been around ufology for a long time, about people who or alien creatures or somebody in France that were either stoned to death or not stoned to death, saved by a monk, who supposedly came from a wrecked ship, and look at that. But if you take a look at the internet, you can find list the top 300. Well, this is just absolutely preposterous. If there were that many crashes, you and I would be having a different discussion about it. I think there's a very few solid cases. There's a lot of single witness cases. There's a lot of misidentification of natural phenomenon. On my blog, I have a what's called a video bar powered by YouTube, and there's a compilation of meteor bolide videos on there, and it lasts for like 3 minutes and 19 seconds, but it's like 20 or 25 different bolides that are seen from security cameras, people filming high school events. And an awful lot of these things, as the meteor breaks up, you get a string of lights behind it. And it looks, if you catch just a glance of it or just a piece of it, it looks all, for all the world, like lighted windows of some kind of a craft on fire going down.
Well, it's safe to say, though, most of these cases, something happened. Might not be a UFO that crashed, but...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
People are reporting what they've seen. They're reporting as accurately as they can. What they saw. It's the interpretation that is sometimes flawed. So when skeptics in the bunker say, well, people just make up all this stuff, they don't know what they're talking about. If you go back and you look carefully at what they said they saw, as opposed to the interpretations of it, then they're accurately describing it. But what they are describing may be something less exciting than a UFO falling out of the sky.
You looked at, what, about 300 cases for this work crash?
I looked at an awful lot of it. We whittled it down to 110 cases. And I wanted to get some from the new millennium in there, which were kind of hard to find. And the cases I found pretty much looked like meteors. Your good friend George Knapp provided one, the Needles, California case. And I'm sure he's talked to you about that.
Yeah, that's the one that happened just a few years ago, right?
It happened in 2008, I believe.
Yeah.
And George was right on it. I think George's attitude, and he and I discussed this at one point, was that what fell was not extraterrestrial, but it was some kind of an experimental craft, because the military or the government or whoever got to it very, very quickly.
It's this new mini shuttle that they've been droning all over the place.